everyone. I'm Scott.
And I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast.
Where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that they see under the surface.
You bet. And this week we're going to talk about Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window. And this is episode number 35.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, classic summer movie, it seemed to me.
Yep, sweltering hot. And Grace Kelly is also sweltering hot. She was, you know, I don't know that I've seen a Grace Kelly movie other than this one. I'd have to think about it.
I don't know if surely I must have, but I can't think of them. And she didn't make that many before she married the Prince of Monaco.
Oh, yes. See, I don't know her story totally, but that's right, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. That's the way I heard or read about it, and I don't even know why that would have been. Yeah, her parents were always kind of angling for a good marriage for her.
Mm-hmm.
And she married the Prince of Monaco and became Princess Grace.
Mm-hmm. And stopped making movies at that time, right?
Yeah, he wasn't into it. He thought she should be over there.
Wow.
In the kingdom.
Yeah.
That teeny tiny little kingdom. So yeah, and then she had Caroline and I can't remember. A boy, probably whatever the king's name was. Prince so-and-so. So see, you can see I did all my background work on this.
Whoa,
I was just watching the movie.
Okay. So she had a very short career then, and you know, how many years after this do you think she would have stopped? Probably not very long, huh?
I think it was fairly recent. She was still young and beautiful and very much in demand by Hollywood. But wasn't she gorgeous?
Yeah.
And as I was telling my husband, I was like, oh, can you imagine every American man at the time watching this? And she's sitting in Jimmy Stewart's lap, just kissing him and going, come on, pay attention to me. And he's like, no, think about it again. Why would he take all those trips at night with that suitcase? And they're all just like, what's wrong with you, man? Did something else get broken besides that leg? Come on.
Oh, man. Yeah.
She was wearing the most gorgeous clothes. I mean, Edith Head did the costumes, and I saw that and went, oh, yeah, I remember the dresses were great. And then I was looking at it going, those are some of the most beautiful clothes that any woman would die to wear. Really great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's see. Oh, she was in High Society, The Swan, To Catch a Thief. Now, To Catch a Thief is another Hitchcock, I believe.
Yes, that's Cary Grant, and they're in Monaco. Yeah. Maybe that's where she
How about that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, IMDb says that her film career ended in 1956, and Rear Window was 1954. Dial M for Murder is another one she was in, and that's also Hitchcock.
Yeah. I've seen her in a lot of movies then.
Yeah.
Because I've seen all those movies you've mentioned.
All right. High Noon.
Just blind. Yeah.
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 How about that?
In fact, I was thinking we should do that movie as a double feature with Rio Bravo, which was John Wayne's answer to High Noon, because he viciously, or maybe not viciously, I can't imagine the Duke being vicious, but he really didn't like it, which had never occurred to me.
How about that? Okay.
And when you watch them together and think about it, it makes a very interesting conversation piece. So.
Okay, well, let's do that.
Well, we're way off the topic. But.
Grace Kelly.
Yes.
She is so good looking. Anyways.
Onwards, yeah. And Hitchcock, you know, liked those blonde-haired, blue-eyed women.
Mm-hmm.
Tippi Hedren in The Birds, and what's her name in Psycho, which although for a very short time at the beginning, and he really liked to cast blonde women.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen enough Hitchcock to have made that conclusion. I've seen Psycho and, what are some others? Well, Rear Window. I had seen this one before now.
Yeah,
and
Rear
liked
Window
it.
And Rope.
Yeah, I have not seen Rope.
I have never seen Psycho, but for a while we were watching a bunch of his stuff. North by Northwest. Notorious.
North by Northwest is the one with the birds.
No, The Birds is the one with the birds.
Oh, okay.
It's crazy hard to
North
remember.
North by Northwest, yeah.
North by Northwest is the one with the famous cornfield scene and Cary Grant.
He's running after an airplane.
Mount Rushmore. And that, I think, also had Tippi Hedren in it.
Huh.
And Notorious, which is one of my favorite movies that we'll have to watch sometime, that has Ingrid Bergman. So when you get a chance to have Ingrid Bergman, you don't care if she's blonde or not, I think. And there are plenty of other movies, but of course I can't think of any of them. There was a psychological one, I think, with Cary Grant also, but it was an earlier one, and it was about skiing. There was always this doubt whether he was a wife killer or not.
Yeah.
From the wife's point of view, of course.
Yeah, it's interesting to have a prominent director, isn't it? You know, we talk about directors often, but, I mean, is there anybody that's current, you know, Joss Whedon is someone I always go see. You know, it doesn't care. It doesn't matter what it is. I'll go see a Joss Whedon movie.
Let me just recommend The Avengers to everyone for a fun summer movie that has Joss Whedon all over it.
That was so entertaining.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, loved it.
And if you haven't watched, if you haven't heard this, be sure to watch until the very last bit of lettering's gone from the screen.
Oh, yeah.
There's another tiny
we
did
that.
Little...
We had that tip when we saw it, so we sat and watched.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
But can you think of anybody to compare Hitchcock with currently, other than maybe M. Night Shyamalan?
Well, he's kind of petered out.
He has, but, you know, he's still the kind of, you know, it's like he directs a film and it's like his film. You know, that's kind of what I'm thinking. But, I mean, who else is like that?
There's Quentin Tarantino, who I've never really watched one of his movies.
I've watched a few of his.
Jackie Brown, and it was typical Tarantino that way. Blah, 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 blah. Can we talk ourselves to death?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, Batman Begins, Inception.
Christopher Nolan.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. To me, he's more the equivalent of Hitchcock because he keeps developing and he's able to do the things he's interested in and look at them from his own point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And they're suspenseful. I mean, there are people like Scorsese. I don't like Scorsese's stuff generally.
And Christopher Nolan has a distinctive style, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Where you can, you know, this is one of his movies.
Exactly.
And that's the same way it is with Hitchcock.
Yeah.
You know, everything that I've seen of his, it's you're like, that's Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, but Christopher Nolan, to me, that's who came to mind. If only I could have remembered his name when I thought of Hitchcock.
Yeah.
And, just kind of doing what they want to do to make the point they want to make.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
He used to be an institution, you know. I mean, there's Hitchcock out. Let's go see it.
Yeah. Yep. And he had the TV show.
That's right. And we used to watch it we watch reruns.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't know when it was on, but that's right.
Yep.
I
used to read when I was a young boy. I would read The Three Investigators, which was Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh.
I think it was
called
out.
Was it a series?
Yeah, Alfred Hitchcock's The Three Investigators. They were
three
young boys that, you know, kind of like Hardy Boys, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, never heard of it.
The one I remember clearly, it was called The Green Ghost.
Okay.
The Mystery of the Green Ghost, I think it was.
Sounds like, you know, Hardy Boys.
Yeah,
or
it's
Nancy
definitely,
Drew,
definitely Hardy Boys style.
Well, and isn't there still an Alfred Hitchcock magazine that is suspense and mystery?
I believe so. Well, Ellery Queen. I don't know if Hitchcock's still around.
I thought that they used to have a podcast.
Oh, really? I thought it was Ellery Queen's that had the podcast.
They also have one. I think they may be run by the same publisher now. But and then what I used to read was there would be short story collections of mysteries that were under the Alfred Hitchcock name. And I think now it occurs to me that may have been from the magazine, I thought it was picked by Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
So I would read them when I was, you know, a tween or whatever it would be at the library.
Yep. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine is alive and well. I'm looking at it right now. They have a July, August, 2012 issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep.
So there. The legacy continues.
Yes. And it does have a podcast, just like you said.
Yeah.
I might try that out.
Yeah. Well, and I think he was one of those directors that, you know, if he put the call out, people were honored to work with him.
Mm. Yeah.
Although he had his favorites. Jimmy Stewart, Cary Grant, whatever blonde, blue-eyed woman was around at the time who was, you know, up and coming.
Yeah, and I do like Jimmy Stewart a whole lot.
Is there anybody who doesn't?
I don't know. and his character in this one was interesting. You know, there were some unlikable parts of him. Yeah, in this one. Mm-hmm.
I guess we should talk about the movie. Some.
Sure, you bet.
It's basically Jimmy Stewart is a reporter who he specializes in thrill-seeking assignments, very dangerous assignments, and he's got a broken leg that, I mean, it's a hip cast even. Mm-hmm. So he really can't move, and his apartment faces onto a courtyard where there are four buildings backing up to it, and there's a common courtyard. And it's an era with no air conditioning, so all the windows are open, and nobody has a TV, which I find to be, you know, that's the one thing that doesn't seem to ring true, really. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, everybody just be watching their TVs. But because he's bored and he only has a week left before he gets the cast off, he's not in any great pain, it doesn't seem. So he spends a lot of his time watching his neighbors out the window.
Yeah.
And he's got a gorgeous girlfriend. He's interested in marriage, but he's not interested in marriage. He's got the feisty nurse who, is she the best person in it?
Oh, she was neat.
Yes.
Yeah, she was
Thelma
fantastic.
Ritter, who specialized in those kind of roles. I was always told by my parents, who just loved her. And then he sees something very mysterious one evening and starts wondering, and it takes him into an investigation that is very difficult to prove whether he's right or not. And it's all held from that one point of view. So it's almost like staging a play in a movie, which actually Hitchcock did an excellent job of in Dial M for Murder. It was a stage play, and he filmed it in such a way that it is riveting if you watch it, and with only one or two outside shots at all. And those are brief.
Yeah. Yeah. So this one is shot
almost
completely from Jimmy Stewart's point of view. So the audience is really taking in what he sees out of his window. So there's kind of an exciting thing. You know, you're looking through people's windows wondering what you're going to see, and he conveyed that really well.
Yeah, it's actually completely from his point of view. I mean, every so often I suppose there's a crane shot because he's looking down out of the window, but that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's very little sound. You know, when he's looking through his window at these other people's lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not hearing much. Sometimes you hear music, some piano music and things, but sometimes you can just hear just barely, you know, an argument that's going on or something if people are raising their voices.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time you're just watching like almost like silent movies in these windows.
Yeah, and you get to know all the people the way he does because you see enough of their lives beforehand when you're just learning to know him and the situation. And he'll look out and see something and he'll just kind of smile like, oh, yeah, there's that couple, or oh, there's this little dog, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he and the nurse will sometimes exchange conversations because the nurse has been coming every day. And so, oh, look, there's Miss Lonely Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
They have names for all of them.
Yeah.
And
Miss Torso.
It's very voyeuristic.
Yeah.
But in a kind of a normal way until he gets real interested in the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
So, how much do, I guess that's kind of the setup.
That basically is pretty much the setup, yeah.
Yeah.
So now let's talk details.
Okay.
I wrote you a note. And I was just saying that one of the things that I observed this time around that I really didn't catch before was that, you know, I felt that this movie's prevailing theme was about marriage. Because in all the people that he's watching, they're all kind of in a different states of marriage, really, including himself. You know, he's having conversations with Grace Kelly's character. And they're talking about marriage all the time. And then he looks out the window and he sees, you know, a couple that's very comfortable together, you know, that you can, it's one of those couples that I imagine that you, you know, when you know them, they're always together, you know, but they're sleeping out on the stoop because it's really, really hot. It's like, you know, 90 something degrees. And So they sleep out on their fire escape.
Yeah.
But they're always together, and they're never arguing. They're just together all the time. And then you've got a newlywed couple. And then you've got Miss Lonely Heart, who desperately wants someone to be with.
She's so lonely.
Yeah.
She fixes dinner and pretends that a guest has come, that she's, you know, she's all dressed up and got her makeup on, and your heart breaks for her.
Yeah, yeah. And then you've got Miss Torso, who's collecting guys without any trouble.
Yeah, she's he calls her a ballet dancer, but it looked more like a Broadway show dancer to me. But she's always wearing the most minimal clothing you can and doing usually leg stretching exercises and everything in a very suggestive way. Not that she thinks anybody's watching.
Right.
These people all act like nobody's watching because they're so used to the fact that life is just there out. They ignore everything outside their window because it's got to be open. But it would stifle.
Yeah, yeah. It's just too hot.
Then you have the composer.
Yeah, the composer.
He's all alone writing his music. That you hear this haunting tune periodically every so often.
Yeah, yeah.
That has an effect on people.
Yeah, that was cool how he did that. And then you've got the couple that is really kind of the focus, or becomes the focus.
Right.
Because you don't know this at the beginning, but... you know, all of a sudden they become, you know, his kind of obsession.
Yeah, but they're directly across the way.
Yeah, they're directly across the way. And the wife is, well, at the beginning she was bedridden, you know, and he was, the husband was bringing her food and things. And, but yet you could tell they weren't getting along very well.
Yeah.
You know, she was mocking him or something. You know, you don't know exactly what the words were, but you just kind of fill that in, you know, in your own head, what, you know,
it's
she's yelling at
see.
Him about. Yeah. So, and then one day, she's not there anymore.
Yeah, in the middle of the night, he falls asleep in his chair a lot of the time watching people, and everything's dark. All windows or blinds are finally closed, and you hear a sharp scream and something like a glass breaking. And he kind of wakes up for a second, doesn't know what he heard, and goes back to sleep.
Yeah.
And, you, oh, something happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're watching a Hitchcock film, so.
That's right.
You're expecting it.
No, in real life, do they tell you what kind of film you're watching?
Yeah.
So when stuff
happens
in real life, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm in a Hitchcock film.
Yeah, the music there.
Yeah.
Well, and I have to say, one of the things I loved this time around that I'd never really noticed before is a lot of the things that happen, because you'll also see scenes happening in other people's lives. They don't just look at the apartment across the way. Music will be playing like a popular song. And I suddenly went, wow, they've made the sound. So it sounds like it's coming from a phonograph at somebody else's apartment. It's kind of distant and muffled. But when you listen to the words, it applies directly to the situation you're seeing. That was very cleverly done. There's also a soundtrack for it. But I really liked that. So in a sense, it was like you were watching that, not knowing if it was a movie or not either, just like Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
He made it as real as he possibly could, because you can't really, it's like any real life situation, he doesn't know. He's putting together a string of circumstances, because then he's wakeful and he sees Thorwald. He hasn't seen the wife all day. The blinds have been down in her bedroom. The guy, Thorwald is the guy's name, played by Raymond Burr most wonderfully in a surly fashion, who by then he'd surely been playing Perry Mason on TV, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
So you're used to seeing him as the kindly Perry Mason, who my grandparents used to watch the reruns and I was bored stiff, but he was always the good guy.
Yeah.
And he's cast very much against type in this, with his hair dyed blonde, I guess, so he's more Danish. Thorwald be Danish.
Yeah.
And Scandinavian of some sort. And, he's sitting there smoking, but never gone in the room all day, talking to people on the phone, and he can tell because he starts getting out his telephoto lens and his binoculars, and everybody's like, oh, you're a peeping Tom. No. He dialed long distance. Who's he calling while he's looking at her jewelry?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
So,
he wraps a saw in newspaper.
And a giant knife.
Giant knife, newspaper. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what first gets the interest. That's right.
Yeah.
And then he's a traveling salesman, and he's got a metal case. And so he goes away in the middle of the night several times with his case and then comes back and goes away again. This leads to grisly conclusions.
Yep. Yeah, and he calls his friend from a war and, you know, who's now a private investigator.
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart does.
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart does, and explains all this to him, and the guy is like, come on. He's like, all right, I'll check it out. But can't find anything.
Well, the wife went off to visit a friend or family somewhere 80 miles north, put her on the train, and the one time when the guy is actually leaving with a woman, Jimmy Stewart's asleep. So we've got a piece of information he doesn't have.
Yeah, and that's an interesting piece of information too, isn't it?
We don't know if he actually did put his wife on the train.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah, we don't know. Yeah, it's you know, so Hitchcock keeps us. That is interesting that he gave us that piece of information, you know. But that's right. You know, he shows Jimmy Stewart sleeping and then Thorwald leaving with the woman. But you don't know who the woman is.
Yeah.
Right? You assume, right?
Right. But for all you know, he's got a girlfriend somewhere, too.
Right, right.
So.
Yeah.
And then the key turning point comes when this couple has this tiny little Yorkie that they have trained to be lowered in a basket to go out in the courtyard. So they don't have to come down all the steps and go back up with it. And the dog keeps digging and digging at one point in the flower bed. And finally, the dog shows up dead. Which leads the woman to deliver this screamed message to the whole courtyard about how whatever happened to saying, love thy neighbor. She's like, none of us talk to each other. You guys are all awful. No one even smiles or says anything. What did you hate about this little dog? That it loved everyone? And so what you see is, because the reason I picked the movie, even though I noticed exactly the same thing you did, which is that all these situations, I was going to say they're about love in some way or the lack of it. But what I picked it for was I thought it was interesting. They were showing all these people existing together in extreme isolation, not paying attention to each other at all. And I'm always hearing about that these days with the internet and TV and air conditioning. My father-in-law used to really rail against air conditioning, keeping you from knowing your neighbor. He said in the old days, you'd sit out on the porch and everybody'd walk by and you knew who each other were and you'd talk. And so there are all these modern conveniences that keep us from talking to each other. Well, they were doing the same thing. And they were in the situation where ideally you would say, they would have all known each other and gotten along and helped each other and had cookouts and whatever.
Yeah.
But so that's not always the case. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Look at that.
And it is interesting that there aren't any TVs in this show. Like, yeah, you're not seeing anybody sitting there watching television.
And no radio either. I mean, because before television, there was radio and everybody would sit around and listen to radio shows like they would TV shows, although that's more communal because it's just sound. But none of that's going on, so that's artificially done.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I wonder why he didn't do that. I guess maybe it'd be boring to have someone sitting in a room, you know, watching TV. But, you know, but I don't know. I think that's interesting. I think that's probably a deliberate point. Yeah. Although so, I guess if he wanted to make the point more clearly, he would have maybe one of those windows where people are just sitting there watching TV and nothing else all the time.
Yeah, where you would never have to even hear from the people.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
you're right.
I just thought that was kind of interesting, because that's the point they're making, is he doesn't know any of those people. And that's what the detective says. He's like, what if somebody's watching you? Did you ever own a saw? Did you ever, you know, all these things? He says, you can make up anything about people if you don't know them. So what do we make up about each other?
Yeah, yeah.
And we do all the time.
Oh, we do all the time. No
we
question.
We always assume that we understand other people's motivations.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the interesting things about living in a small town. And I say interesting, it can be a good thing and it can be a burden. And I think most often it's a burden. where that in a small town, there's a lot of things that people think that they know, and they run with that, you know. So you know, they get upset, or you know, they get emotional about things that often aren't even true, because it's been passed around and it's become kind of this made up thing that people think is going on, but yet it's not really.
And that's interesting, because when you think about it, we're from the Catholic point of view, we are designed to be in community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the family is the unit that was created first. And think about just throughout history, you traditionally, I mean, as humankind was evolving, developing and everything, there would have been small towns, tribes wandering around, whatever. But you would have always had that rub against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as big as your small town.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
So the chore for a Christian in that point of view is to not do that, to get along and not make things up, to find out the truth, to give the most charitable assumption first.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the thing we automatically leap to, is it?
Yeah, it sure isn't. It sure isn't.
We're more likely to be like Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the thing. I often go through these periods where I just hate to watch the news. And it's not because everything's grisly or bad or something. It's because I feel like I'm not getting factual information. And I hate getting worked up about stuff that you later find out, well, that really wasn't quite how that happened. And you're like, oh, come on.
And they never go back and tell you the other side of it.
No, they never go back and tell you.
And then it's done.
And you get a little square in the newspaper that says, oh, by the way, that was incorrect. We kind of messed that one up. But here's, you know, if you can catch this box, then, you know.
Well, yeah. And a lot of times what's kind of interesting now that you mention that is the information's out there, but we still trust what somebody told us.
Mm-hmm.
Like last week, and I was going to put this on my blog, but last week Joanne McPortland was saying in the Catholic Church and the government's struggle over religious liberty and contraception and health insurance and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you know what I realized? My mother told me, go to the source. And she said, all the documents everybody's referring to are out there. So she went through and read everything that the Obama administration was referring to in terms of like figures on things. She read everything that the church was referring. She read everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, okay, so as clearly and neutrally as I can, here's what I found. But here are all the links. Go read for yourself. It was very interesting.
Hmm.
And I said, why don't I do that?
Yeah, yeah.
Why, the things I really care about, I should go through and do that. But I don't. I'm just as bad as everyone else. I just go, oh, well, the side I agree with said this.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
She didn't discover anything that changed my mind, by the way. But the fact that none of us had gone to do that, that's not good on any of us.
Well, I have found that, you know, whenever somebody says something about the Pope or the Vatican, I know I've said that here on this podcast, but you've got to go find out what he really said, because it's always incorrect. And, you know, sometimes they have the words right, but the context incorrect, or, you know, it's like this little piece of a paragraph that he wrote. And anyway, I've found that whenever I read something that upsets me in some way, I got to go find the original, what was actually said, because it's almost never what they have been reporting.
Well, that's the thing. And in her case, what she did is she went and looked at who funded all the reports that everybody was using, and you know, what were the sources of all these things, and just basically it was very interesting reading all that. And it's what you're saying, like, because I will do that for the Vatican. I think of that, but I guess that's because I care more personally about it.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be the case. But see, that's the thing with L.B. Jeffries is his name, Jimmy Stewart's name in the show, and they call him Jeff. But he doesn't have a way to do that. the only way he has is a couple times he gets the nurse and his girlfriend Lisa to go out and do a little investigation.
Mm, yeah.
And that's when things really start to happen. But other than that, it's all just supposition.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't mean you can't get the right idea, because early on, Lisa gets on his side. And it's when the dog is killed. She's there when that happens. And the only person who doesn't come out to listen to this speech and see what the screaming is about is Thorwald.
Yeah.
Who sits in the dark in his apartment, and the only way you can tell he's there is by the glow of his cigarette.
Yeah. That was really
very effective.
A striking image, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, just alone, yep.
Yeah. And so that was telling enough, but it's interesting that you and I noticed the same thing, that whatever, you know, whether it's marriage or just love in general, all those things, they were about relationships, not just isolation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Miss Lonely Hearts is looking for someone. The composer, it turns out, also, but that's, of course, at the very end, you find that out, that, you know, he could be interested. But he's trying to get his composition sold to someone. Miss Torso,
mm-hmm.
She's fending off men. She's got zillions of men coming home. She's not interested in any of them. You find out why at the end. There's one lady who we'd forgotten about. I don't think they had a name for her. She does these really odd sculptures.
Yeah, yeah.
Down in the garden. But she tries to be friendly to Thorwald, who won't talk to her at all.
Yeah. Yeah, she says something. Well, we know why, because he had his wife buried there or something.
Right.
But she was like, well, you're doing that wrong. You need to water those and they'll be better. And he's like, shut up.
Yeah. Get away from me. Alone.
Yeah. Shut up. I've got a dead wife in here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and even the married couple, you see him carry her over the threshold. And then the whole time the blinds are closed. So you're like, oh, I know what's going on in there. A couple times the guy is leaning out, smoking a cigarette, like, huh, what's going on out here? And you hear, Larry. He's like,
work.
Whoa, she's insatiable.
Yep.
But then yet at the end, he hasn't been truthful, because the last thing you hear her saying is, I guess the honeymoon's over, because she says, well, if I'd have known you'd quit your job, we wouldn't have gotten married.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's every single thing is showing some different facet of looking for love, mm-hmm. dealing with the person that you're with.
Yeah.
Or not, as in, you know, Thorwald's case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Jeff himself is, you know,
he says,
yeah, maybe I'll get married someday, you know, but they're talking about marriage too. But he's like, I need somebody who can come with me and do anything. And
right.
at the same time, you know, when he's not willing to, he sees Grace Kelly's character as a certain type of girl. And who's never going to be adventurous or anything like that. So he's kind of making assumptions on her part, too.
Yeah, and he's not giving her a chance.
And then, you know, when she starts to get wrapped up into this, she gets pretty excited. She's loving it the whole time.
Yeah.
And I think that the reason is because she's proving to him that, hey, this is the kind of person I am and I fit.
That, and I think she just never had the opportunity before.
Yeah, probably
not. You know,
she's
leaving
the
note under Thorwald's door and then having to run and dodge, and you uh-huh. watch him looking around and she's hiding and he comes, she's, oh, what happened? You know, and
uh-huh.
he's just looking at her and his eyes are just shining.
Mm-hmm.
He's, oh, this is a new part of you I never saw. Because she
right.
works for, is it a fashion magazine or a high fashion department store? So all her days are taken up with clothes and
yeah.
meetings with designers and things.
Right, right.
So she's never had the chance to leave high society and do anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was really cool how much she was enjoying herself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and when they don't find anything in the flower bed where they can tell the flower was messed with.
Yeah.
And she on her own says, that's it, I'm going to go search his apartment.
Yeah, and I think that last 15 to 20 minutes of the movie
mm-hmm.
were absolutely fantastic.
Oh.
You know, edge of your seat stuff. So, I mean,
sure.
Jimmy Stewart is trapped in his wheelchair, and he's watching other people do this stuff on his behalf, and he's putting people in danger, and then she goes ahead and says, well, I'm just going to go ahead in this guy's apartment.
Oh,
and
yeah.
she even climbs out on the, I mean, she could have fallen. I mean, I would have been going crazy. Just like, well, holy crap.
And he is, and so are you, because when Thorwald catches her in the apartment and he grabs her and then he turns the lights out and he's sitting there going, ah! Yeah. And they've called the police already, but there's nothing they can physically do.
Yeah.
Except I would have stood out there and screamed and pointed, you know.
Right,
but
right.
It was the only thing I could think of. But you're sitting there too going, oh my gosh, we're watching her being murdered in front of our eyes.
Yeah, wow.
It's he really conveys that helplessness, and that's what everybody has always felt on his behalf.
Mm-hmm.
He sees the tables turned for once, too.
Yeah, yeah.
He can't do the things he wants to do, and he's watching other people take the risks that no doubt were driving Grace Kelly crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he got his leg broken, it's because he was standing in the middle of a raceway taking pictures of race cars going by, and a race car breaks up, and he's lucky only his leg was broken, actually. You see the picture he took.
Yeah.
You're just like, you idiot. You're just thrill-seeking for the heck of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting the picture.
Yeah. Well, I understand. Journalists, all that. And that's his thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and then all the way to the end, you know, when Thorwald notices...
Everyone's gone.
Yeah, yeah. When Thorwald notices... That was a cool moment, too. I mean, another classic Hitchcock moment. Grace Kelly has her hands behind her back, and she's pointing at the ring. She's like, I found it, I found it. You know, to her, this was proof, absolute proof that that woman was gone. Because the wedding ring was there. And Thorwald notices her pointing to the ring and then looks across the way right at Jimmy Stewart, and that's a good moment.
And he says to Thelma Ritter, he goes, turn the light off. And I'm like, you guys were sitting here with the lights full on this whole time. I'm like, what have people been seeing you do? But it's like, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Turn the light off. And they pull back and I'm like, oh no.
Oh,
well, then everybody's gone. Yeah. And it's just him and his wheelchair, and the phone rings and he picks it up and he thinks it's his detective friend. He's like, I think Thorwald's clearing out. And there's this silence. And he's like, oh crap.
Oops.
And you hear the door slam downstairs and you're like, he's coming for him and he can't get away.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a tense moment.
Oh,
yes.
Wow. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, really, really great ending to this movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even,
really, really masterful.
It really was. It really was. Mm-hmm. So, yep. And then, I wonder what happened at the after that. So the guy ends up with more time on his hands. But they kind of end, and Grace Kelly's there. You know, he's asleep in his wheelchair, and you know, she's reading something about the Himalayas or something. And then, when with she realizes he's asleep, she switches to this fashion magazine.
Yeah.
But, I wonder if they got married.
I think so. I think what happened is he'd seen what he needed to.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's like, I could get you a job, you know, you could have your own studio and this and that. And I'm thinking what happened is he saw what he needed to see in her.
Uh-huh.
You know, he needed to see the adventurous side, that she was more faceted than he knew.
Yeah.
And so once that happens, I think he could either settle down and go off on the occasional assignment, or, you know, she could go with him on one thing or whatever.
Yeah.
Because she was ready to do it. She was proving. She's like, well, have you ever taken a suitcase this small? And she's got her night things in it.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, so she's trying to show, I can do these things, and he won't believe it. Because we know how that is. We all have these ideals when we get married or think we know what we're looking for in a spouse. And then you meet the right person, and a lot of the things that you thought were so required aren't really required. They're things we made up.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same way with having kids, too. I'm going to be this kind of parent. And in some ways you are, and in some ways you aren't, because the reality of dealing with another person is so different than what we imagine.
Yeah, and people are different, too. It's hard to be the same parent to two kids. You know, you're kind of almost a different person to each one.
I know.
You try to be fair.
Well,
you try to be fair, but people need different things.
And also, each person is so different.
Yeah, that's the thing.
They have to sometimes be dealt with in very different ways in order for everybody to understand what's going on and learn and everything. And it's funny because I just happen to be around a lot of young mothers or people having their first babies due to various things I do in my church. And one of them was, she's going to have her first baby in August, and she's reading all the parenting books and this and that. She's worried about this and that. Well, we all do that. I've been there a long time ago. And another young mother, but not as young, was saying, don't worry, it will all come to you naturally. And she said, well, that's what everyone says. And I said, well, here's the other thing to remember. The baby itself will have something to say about this. And she just looked at me and I said, that's something nobody told me. That baby, when it's born, it has its own distinct personality and will be very different from another baby you have. Mm-hmm. You and that baby will figure it out together. And she was like, oh, I never thought of that. That's kind of makes me relax. It's not all on me. I was like, no, the baby's very interested in these things too. And it's kind of that's kind of the point, I guess, about the isolation and watching all these people so separately with their own issues of one sort or another. It's theory is fine. Like Jimmy Stewart's got all the theories worked out. But when you come up against an actual person, it's almost never what we think it's going to be. And that's why, like, all, you know, getting into a fight with somebody on the internet or based on a news story we saw, like you were saying, it's a trap that I fall into time and time again. And then when I'm face to face with someone, you never say the things as harshly as you think you will. You never, and then you find out more information and you realize you have to suddenly change things on the fly.
Yeah.
That's why it's important to not be isolated like those people are. Important to do things face to face, like whether it's volunteering or something like your theater stuff.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, in a sense, volunteering, but you also get a great deal of joy out of it. So it's also an artistic thing that you do for yourself. Because that is so different from what we make up for ourselves in these little spots of isolation we can be in.
Yeah, no question. You know, I've never lived in a big city, you know, like New York, like this movie. Mm-hmm. You know, I often wonder, is it a bunch of small towns kind of connected together? Or, you know, I've often heard people say that you're really kind of anonymous in a big city. And you can go through life without really contacting anybody at all, which is, I guess, kind of what you're saying, that, you know, the point of this movie.
Well, and I've lived both ways because when I was single, it was hard for me to connect with anybody outside of work. That's the struggle you hear about, and it's a really valid one. My husband,
when you were single, did you live in Dallas?
I lived in Houston.
Houston.
Well, I lived in Dodge City, which was really small. But even there, I didn't know tons of people outside my work because I wasn't involved in any other group. You know, and I'm thinking back now, and this was always the thing in Dallas, the same way, and in Houston, the same way, and in Dallas, until our kids went to school, we would try to connect with people, but because we didn't belong to a church or some other group like that, where you're kind of forced into contact with people, we had a hard time as a couple. You know, we had friends in our neighborhood. But a lot of them, you know how it is. They just because they have a house next to you doesn't mean you click.
Right.
And so we would have, you know, we'd have parties with people from both our works, and we'd, you know, do things with, you know, old childhood friends of my husband's who moved to Dallas and stuff. But we didn't feel like we had a real community really until we, you know, got active in our church. And that's a cliche, but I think, you know, my sister has had the same problem a lot until she recently started, she joined a marketing group for women, and they just moved to Florida recently, and they'd lived in Utah for a really long time, and she had her groups of people there, you know. But this group has kind of, not turned her on, made her come alive in a way that I hadn't seen before. She's really found her group of people. That it nurtures her and gives her a lot, and she can give back to them. I mean, she's using them to raise food for a food bank that had run out of food. And she just went in and went, this is ridiculous. Here we are with all this money and they're out of food. Come on, everybody. They gave her $3,000 unplanned.
Wow.
So that's, see, then the ripples start to form in the community. Because she wants to do more things with the food bank. Well, she'll bring them into this group she knows. But it's that face-to-face, where do you find your group? Because for us, it is our small town is, I don't really travel much outside of my immediate area because I don't need to for work or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's through the church that I know all these people. So I can be in my Dallas grocery store with all these people from, and it's a kind of a tourist site because it's a unique kind of a store.
Uh-huh.
So there'll be all the tourists there, as I call them, on the weekends who've come to see the store. But I'll see five people I know. You know?
Yeah. Interesting.
And they're from my church, or, you know, the kids went to school with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so some ways it's living somewhere long enough, and in some ways it's not just going to your church, but volunteering and doing something where you have to be involved face-to-face.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with everything you said. Yeah, when you go out and you volunteer and you do something, you get to meet people on a different level. Because you're doing stuff with them, and that's where the depth comes from.
And that's what's really real.
Yeah, yeah, when you really start to get to know people.
Yeah, we're made to be that way. I mean, before TV, before the internet, before the written word,
mm-hmm.
this is what we had. This is who we are, really, and we can't leave it behind. So when we do, I mean, I love talking to you, and I can't wait. Someday we're going to meet, Scott. Mm-hmm. I just know it. But
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and so this is probably as close as you can get to the face-to-face stuff, because talking to someone is the same.
Yeah.
But it's not the same as volunteering in something where you're trying to achieve a goal and maybe you don't agree with people. That's what helps form you as a person, informs other people, and rubs off the rough edges and helps you learn how do you apply true charity, true love.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, you know, you don't have to feel anything. You just have to care about the other person in a kind way.
Yeah.
You know,
that's for sure. That's for sure.
And I guess that's really what you see in this movie that I just didn't remember. I saw The Isolation, and that's what made me pick it. Besides the fact that it's a great movie, but
and it is a great movie. I mean, it's great. This is a must see, something that everybody needs to see.
Yeah, it's really a coin toss between this and Notorious as to which one is my favorite Hitchcock movie.
I'm writing that down. I don't think I've seen Notorious. So
that's
I will see that one too. I won't see one. I'll see both.
Well, that's on my list also, and it's really interesting. I'll just say, because it's got some of the best actors ever. James Mason.
Oh, cool.
Wonderful villain. And he didn't always play a villain. But it's got Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman both acting against type.
Oh, wow.
Don't see that very often.
Yeah, would you say that Jimmy Stewart is acting against type in this?
Well, I suppose, except that, you know what? He's such an everyman. He even makes this guy likable.
Yeah. I mean, yeah,
even
no question. Jumping
to conclusions and becoming a voyeur and, you know, making horrible sarcastic comments to his girlfriend.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, she'll get this look on her face and you just want to smack him. So in that sense, I guess you're right. He is acting against type.
Oh.
And when I watched, what's that Western he's in that everybody always talks about? It's him and John Wayne, and he goes west. Well, I'll think of the name, and other people are calling it out to me right now, I'm sure. When they listen, we'll put it in the show notes. But that was when I saw, he ruined the movie for me because he was so much Jimmy Stewart. And I was like, I know he's not supposed to be, I know a Western guy, but he's just Jimmy Stewart stuck in the middle of this movie to me.
Gotcha.
So I just was really disillusioned about his acting at that point. I was like, he's been so carefully cast every other time.
Yeah.
Got it.
Wow. I had someone tell me one time that Denzel Washington is like our current Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can see the connection to that.
Everybody loves him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's why he made, didn't he make a movie where he was the villain?
Yeah, I remember Tom Hanks made one where he was, Oh, what was that one? There was machine guns in it. Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. And also Tom Cruise, although nobody really cares about him, but he did the one where it was like Jamie Foxx was the cab driver and Tom Cruise was the hired killer who was using him to get around to make his hit, and then he was going to kill him or something. I was kind of interested in seeing that.
Hmm. Yeah.
This is the podcast of the movies whose names we can't remember.
The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
That's
is that it. Okay.
I kept thinking there's the L and it's somebody's name. That's it. And actually, it's a pretty good movie, except that I hated Jimmy Stewart in it so much, it ruined it for me. Mm. But the end is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those movies where you're going along watching, going, oh, okay, 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 okay. And then to me, I don't know, just the way the end worked, it was good. But yeah, he in that movie, it was just the stammering usual shtick, I would hate to say, but kind of that you see in everything. He didn't do all that stammering stuff in this. Mm. It was much more directed.
Yeah, he didn't at all. Yeah.
But I don't know if that's because he was directed. Is that the director?
Oh, I'm sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't want to say anything bad against Jimmy Stewart, who we all love.
Yes.
Because we should love him. But I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like watching John Wayne in The Quiet Man, which is also on my list to watch sometime.
All right, cool. With
it for this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen that, right?
No, actually, I have not.
Oh.
Am I writing that down too?
I think it's on my list, and if it isn't, I'm going to make sure it's on there because he's also playing a character it's John Wayne, but it's not John Wayne. You know.
I actually have not seen a heck of a lot of John Wayne, to be honest. Couple of westerns and The Longest Day.
I never saw that.
Yeah.
I never saw his not a heck of a lot. Much.
Mm-hmm.
That's a World War III movie, right?
It is. Yeah, it's about D-Day.
I just read a great reflection and interview article by Roger Ebert. I don't know if you subscribe or read his journal, his online journal.
No, I haven't. I haven't lately. I think I have off and on, but
yeah,
not lately.
You know, it's essentially a blog that where he writes about anything he wants to, and sometimes it's entertaining because he's writing about the rice cooker that he loves, and sometimes it's, you know, not as entertaining. But this is the most recent thing, and it's basically an excerpt of a long piece he did on him, having known him for years and years. And as it was wonderful because, for one thing, it's so John Wayne to me. And he was who you saw on the screen. But at the same time, I'm looking at the pictures going, maybe I've said this before, my father-in-law looked so much like John Wayne and even kind of talked like him. And it wasn't conscious. I didn't even realize it until we had the kids watching some John Wayne movie, and they were both like 8 and 10, something like that. And they both looked at it and went, Grandpa. And it was as a younger man. He was quite a handsome fellow, and so was John Wayne. And he was a tall, big man like John Wayne, and he was just a quintessential Texan. Quite the gentleman, you know, but a man's man. He was in the Marines in World War II, all this stuff. And that was when I suddenly took a new look at my father-in-law and went, oh, my gosh, yeah. So for me, I read that stuff and I look at those pictures and I go, and this is how my father-in-law was, too. You read what John Wayne is saying and a lot of the similar feelings about stuff, too. They understood what being a man was. And that's something you don't see a lot these days, I think.
Yeah, it's different now, isn't it? Yeah.
I think that's why I like to read the Art of Manliness blog.
Yeah, I've seen you link to them a few times. And
Yeah,
but I usually click through and see what's going on over there.
Well, they'll have, you know, a variety of things like how to tie a tie like a man or how to build a campfire or however. But it's never condescending. They're always like, we know this stuff and a lot of guys ask about it. But like they had one series on or one article on how to act like a man. And they said, the problem is that young guys these days all are following the current wisdom, which is when you feel it, you'll know it and you'll do it. And they're like, no, in the old days, what you did is you mimicked what you saw. And that's how you kind of gradually took it on. And what that made me think of is that's very much like the Christian way of, I'll cultivate the virtues. As I practice these virtues, they'll gradually become part of me, and I will become a better person and better able to fend off temptation and problems on the way because I will have practiced these things which strengthen me.
Yeah.
And it was that same, a lot of the things that they'll talk about in there are basic Christian values, like, or just good, solid people-building values for anybody who's not Christian. Mm-hmm. Or even American or whatever. I mean, they're just things you want to do. How to be respectful, how to have integrity, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how we got off on the Duke, but the quiet man.
The quiet man, right.
Yeah.
Wrote it down.
Which is funny because it has the least John Wayne attributes ever, but it's also got, I would venture to say, the longest and most entertaining fist fight in the history of the movies. And I'm not kidding. It's like the best thing ever.
All right.
Yeah. So
well, I will watch that.
Maybe we'll have to watch that after The Incredibles.
Ooh, cool.
I haven't picked a movie, but let's. I don't want to get too far out. Shall we just pick that now?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds great.
That's a good summer movie also.
All right. Cool.
Okay.
That's going to be fun.
Since I'm waxing enthusiastic about it.
All right. Well, cool.
So yeah. Thumbs up on this movie.
Absolutely. Two thumbs up. Yep. Everybody go check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's see. Next we've got The Killer Angels, right?
Yes.
Very cool. And who knows where I'll be when we record that, but I'm excited. I got the audiobook and started it.
Okay, well, I got the book.
Because I've read it before.
And I looked and said, oh, so many maps of the Battle of Gettysburg. I'm quite disheartened. And then I started reading the descriptions of the people and the generals. And I went, oh, actually, I'm very invested in these people already. I like all of them, almost. So I'm excited about reading it more.
Oh, good. Yeah, I hope you enjoy it.
Let's see. So now you had just so your bit of news. You were going to start your own company. But
yeah, I was going to start my own business and move to Idaho Falls, Idaho.
Right.
And then kind of got this offer that I just am really excited about. So I'm going to go to work for a different company. And it's in Logan, Utah. So that's where I'm going to be moving is Logan, Utah. And I say I mean my family and I. Just me. So... Yeah.
Well, now, how far is that from where you live? Is that
it's only 50 minutes away from here.
Oh.
You know, a person could almost commute there, but we're still going to make the move because that still costs quite a bit of
change,
money.
It's time for change, you said, right?
Yeah, it's time for some change. And the my wife needs to be able to find a place to work as well. You know, and in the place where I live, I know I've said it many times before, but it's very small.
Right.
About 3,000 people, so...
How big is Logan then?
You know, I don't know how many people Logan is at, but Logan is where we go to watch movies and things.
Okay.
So it'll be really a big thing for us to be able to, after 16 years, move back to a place where if I want to see a movie, we can just go. And it's not,
not
a 4-hour deal. Yeah.
Yeah, most of a day, really.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's a major excursion.
Oh, yeah, plus everything else. They'll have more people coming through, like if you wanted to see somebody talk or have a play. Or...
Yeah, and it's a college town. Utah State University is there.
Okay, well, great, that'll bring a lot of cultural stuff.
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff going on in there, in that city.
That's exciting.
Yeah, and the work's going to be fun, too. I'll be making automated parking systems where you park your car and your car's whisked away and parked. Or put on a shelf.
We had just watched Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol.
Yes, now that would
I don't
be
know
cool.
if you saw that.
I did. Yeah.
Okay. Well, as Tom went, he goes just like the end of Mission Impossible.
Exactly.
And I went, oh my gosh.
That's how I expect my everyday at work to be.
Wow. Well, I hope you're working out because you're going to have to take a lot of falls.
That's right.
Yeah. But you're going to be the guy someone's going, there's something stuck in the gears again.
Exactly. Exactly. Come fix this.
But you're going to Florida for a while then.
Yeah. One of the places where they're installing one of these systems is Florida. And I'm told that one of my first things is to go out there for about 2 weeks and learn as much as I can about this. So
Exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting.
Now, be sure to try, you know, some Cuban food while you're there.
Oh, okay.
And some other restaurants so you can tell us all about it.
I'm actually a little bit familiar with the place because my parents, who are from Queens, of course, retired in Florida because that's the law, according to Seinfeld. So they have a condo in Hollywood, Florida, which is just a suburb of Miami.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I've been to Florida several times.
Oh.
Yeah. But I can't say that I've ever been to a Cuban restaurant, though.
Well, that's just a crime.
So that's going to go on the list.
I've just at least a couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because one of the books I want us to read sometime is has a Cuban Cuban origin detective whose mother runs a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
So you have to have that background for us.
All right. I will do that.
Okay. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's going to be good. So after the Killer Angels, we'll read The Incredibles
watch The Incredibles. The Incredibles.
Yep, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
As it should be. In fact, one of my birthday presents was the soundtrack to The Incredibles.
Oh, wow.
So last weekend we were having cocktails and listening to the soundtrack, and I was like, oh my gosh, this music is so great.
Oh, I love that.
He did it in such a spy, 60s, 70s spy movie kind of way. So perfectly, but it's own music, and I could tell where everything was happening in the movie based on it because I love that movie so much.
Oh,
I'm excited.
Yep. I'm looking forward to watching Brave. Have you seen an ad for that one?
I did see the trailer when we went to see the Avengers, and it was the first time I'd seen the full long trailer. I am also looking forward to that.
The animation is incredible. I can't believe how far they've come. It's just astounding.
Well, and on the one hand, it's kind of the typical, these days, typical, you know, girl type movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like it's got the other elements. I'm trusting Pixar to come back.
Yeah, me too.
Cars 2.
I'm going to trust Pixar till they let me down, and they haven't yet.
Well, I didn't see Cars 2, so I didn't give them the chance to let me down there. I understand that was...
Well, Cars 2 was not magnificent. I mean, it looked great. Did I tell you that I got a Christmas gift from someone this year? That was the Pope Mobile, the Pope and the Pope Mobile from Cars 2.
I think you did.
Oh, it's awesome. I was thrilled.
That is great.
Yeah. So, that'll sit on my desk at my new job.
I wish you hadn't told me that was in it. Now I might have to rent it.
Well, it's in there for the briefest. It's just like a news clip. It's just, so Cars 2 takes place kind of all over the world. Like a tour, racing tour.
I thought they just went to wherever some race was happening.
Yeah,
so, and like Le Mans.
They were doing something in Italy. And they just, the Pope is not in this movie. It's just the briefest little blip.
Well, I just thought the Pope Mobile might be in the movie. That's Pope Mobile's enough for me.
Well, everybody's a car. So it's funny. It's the car. Right. I'll have to put a picture on the
show
notes.
Oh, so the Pope is a car.
The Pope is also a car. Yeah. Exactly.
I didn't think about that. You're right.
Everybody, so the car goes in the back of the Pope Mobile.
That's hilarious.
You know, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to take a picture of that because it is packed. It is in a box somewhere.
You know what? We have time.
Yeah.
Sometime in the future, this is a treat we can all look forward
to. That's right. Soon we will all see the Pope Mobile.
That's right. So.
Yep.
Okay. Well, so.
So you haven't selected the next book, right?
No, I haven't. I was kind of going to let it be kind of more organic, although now I'm thinking we may have to read the mystery I was talking about. It's kind of a mystery / supernatural book. And can you tell it's early or it's not as early as it was? But I can't remember the name of that either. I've got it on my list, but I've got a 3-part notebook with so many different kinds of lists in it.
Oh, I love that.
Like I could find it.
Yep.
So maybe we could do that book.
Sounds great.
I'll never find it.
That sounds like the best book ever.
It's got some voodoo. Mm-hmm. It's got Catholicism. It's got a mystery. It has Cuban restaurant, I think.
All right.
The problem is there's 3 of them, and I can't tell which one I'm melding together. But Michael Gruber is the author, though.
Ah, Michael Gruber.
Read anything by him.
No, I have not. In fact,
you
I don't
have
know.
Not?
That
okay. Well, then. Oh, Valley of Bones.
Valley of Bones. All right.
Maybe that doesn't have a restaurant. I think it's the one before that has the Cuban restaurant.
Hmm.
So you'll have to do your restaurant trying for deep background.
Excellent. Excellent. Sounds
so maybe
good.
We'll do Valley of Bones. I was trying to keep things closer in, but, you know, just I got carried away. So we'll just pick that one.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Okay. Very so cool. Very cool.
Quiet Man.
I'm excited. Okay. That's going to be great.
Yep. I'm looking forward to all of it.
All right. Me too.
Okay. Well, have a good couple or so weeks. Yeah.
I will. I think everything after this weekend is downhill. This will be a busy few days, and then it'll start tapering off.
Yeah, because you move Friday, you say?
Yep. Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah, and unfortunately we're spread, you know, because we were planning to move to Idle Falls. We're not halfway up there. We're maybe a quarter of the way up there.
Okay.
And so it's going to be an interesting couple of days to get all our stuff in the same town.
Oh. Are you renting a trailer or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Not using a moving company or?
No.
No, that would be that much. Yeah. Why do that?
We just don't have that much stuff, so not important. Yeah,
just a household of four people.
Exactly,
no big deal.
And it's amazing how much stuff that there is.
I know.
How does it happen? I just don't understand it.
I've been looking around our house doing the same thing, going, mm-hmm. You know, really, I just have to walk around with a big trash bag or bags for donating things mm-hmm. to people, going, all this stuff, I don't need all this stuff. How did this all get here?
Yeah.
Yep.
Just
same
incredible.
Thing.
Yep. You keep.
Yep. Well, good luck moving and right. everything and going to Florida. And we'll see where you are when we talk next.
All right. Sounds great.
I'll still be in Dallas. Sweltering.
Sweltering hot.
Yep. Sweltering hot.
I'm sure it's not going to be chilly in Miami.
No, probably not. But it will be more exotic. So.
Great.
Or something. All right.
Well, we'll see everybody in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Have a great couple of weeks, everyone.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.